Adventist World Radio, from broadcast to baptism, powered by SID Media.
Good afternoon to you, Cindy Song.
Good afternoon, Zama. How are you?
Very well, thank you, sir. And how are you doing?
I am blessed and highly favored, and yourself?
Lovely, man. I'm blessed as well. Thank you so much for asking. I do hope that your day has been good.
It has definitely been good.
Lovely. Great to have you. Now, those of you who are joining us, Cindy So is no stranger to AWR. He always talks to us about all things legal and helping us to understand the law. Recent reports show that a staggering 87% of South African adults have experienced some form of online scam in the past year. From fake SAPS recruitment posters on Facebook to AI-powered voice cloning scams on WhatsApp. The digital world has become a minefield for our hard-earned cash and our personal safety. But while the scammers are getting smarter, our laws are finally catching up at last. And so today, why not zoom into Cyber Crimes Act and how it's changing the game for victims of fraud and online abuse. Now, Cindy, so what are the most common social media scams currently targeting South Africans, or maybe people who are online? Because it's not, it may not be particularly be South Africans. We've got listeners from across our Southern African region. So, especially on platforms like Facebook and WhatsApp.
Thank you very much, Zama, for the question. There's a number of scams that are going around, especially on social media. And in part, one of the reasons why there's this growth of these scams is particularly because, you know, it is obviously done on social media. Mm. It's easy to access people and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. Now, there is card deposit scams that are on a Facebook marketplace. Mm-hmm. And there's romance fraud, which is moving from Facebook. Sometimes it moves from Facebook to WhatsApp, mm-hmm. or any other social media platform, mm. To WhatsApp. And then there's what we call secret sister surveys. Mm. These are designed, basically to steal a person's identity. Mm. And finally, there's one particular scam. I was almost caught by that particular scam where they hijack your cell number and your WhatsApp profile. Now, just an explainer, obviously, of how these particular scams work. Mm-hmm. What happens with the fake card deals is the scammers pose as card dealers, or they pose as somebody who is selling a vehicle.
Okay.
And what they do is they'll say, okay, you know what? To show that you're interested in this car, what you need to do, because I'm not interested in people who are coming here to play around and view my car and waste my time. I'm not interested in time wasters. So what I need is a 50% deposit. Pay a 50% deposit. And what we do is these cars are repossessed cars. Mm, mm, mm. Now, they're obviously coming cheaper, and I've got a buyer somewhere who's mm-hmm. waiting to buy it. So if you're not going to pay this deposit, I'd rather wait for this person who's going to buy this car.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously what they're working on there, they're working on your psyche, the fear of losing this deal. It comes in as a very good deal. I'm buying this car for mm-hmm. way cheaper than I would have bought it, because it is repossessed, and all that they need to do is probably recoup the money that they're going to use to pay the bank,
mm-hmm.
and you pay the 50% deposit.
Mm.
And once you pay the 50% deposit, the money is gone.
Mm.
These are very common sort of scams, because they're working on your psyche. And then there's the romance scams. And we know about these romance scams. What people do is they build trust for weeks. So you're chatting to this person, you're getting to know this person, What they then do is they say, okay, you know what, I can travel to come and see you. This person is based wherever they are based. They say, no, look, I'll travel to come and see you. I'm coming on such and such a day. They come, they don't even come through on that particular day. They'll call you on that particular day to say, look, I have landed at OR Tambo International, but I brought you a gift or something of that nature. And now customs is saying, look, I cannot enter this. I cannot enter with this particular gift. So I need. I'm out of money, or I need to pay for this customs for this gift. And then what do? You transfer money to them because you're obviously expecting this particular gift from a lover that you've never met, and then the money is gone. Then there is these survey chains that go on. Interestingly enough, you know, Zama, when you and I are opening, for instance, a bank account, or we are going through, opening a new email address or whatever it is, you're entering into a particular profile. There are certain security questions that they'd ask you, and they're common security questions. For instance, they'd ask you, what is your mother's maiden name? What was your first car? What is the first car that you brought, and so on, bought, and so on and so forth? What happens as you're answering? These look like games. As you're answering, you're feeding these security questions with answers. And what they then do is they then can use that particular information to access your personal information and so on and so forth. And then this is the particular scam that almost caught me. My business partner's phone got hijacked somehow.
Okay.
And then I received a WhatsApp message. She says to me, she's frantic on the WhatsApp. She calls me Mr. S. She says, Mr. S, look, I need 1,500. My phone is acting up and so on and so forth. I need 1,500. I need to pay for this urgently. I think, okay, you know what? I'm going to send her the thingy, the money. I'm going to send her the 1,500. But where do I send this money? In fact, these are thoughts that are going through my mind. So I'm thinking, oh, okay, no, let me transfer it to her bank account. But immediately before I even answer to that question, she then sends another message and says, please don't transfer it to my bank account because there's something wrong with my bank account. And then immediately I thought, oh, there's something wrong here. Her phone is problematic. The bank account is problematic. So I then sent her a message and said, call me so we can talk, and then I'll tell you how I'm going to send the money. And that was the last I got any messages from her. So eventually she then calls me from a different number. She tells me, look, my number's been hijacked. So if you receive any texts from anyone asking for money, please do not send the money, because I've heard a friend of mine sent somebody some money. So fortunately, I was lucky in that way. But I mean, this is a hijacked number. It seems like the person that you're talking to, because they go through the trail of emails. They see, okay, how do I call Zama? I call him Zama. Oh, okay. So Zama, may I please have some money? I need to deal with this and that. So that is what they do when they hijack your number.
Now, Cindy, so with the Cyber Crimes Act, I think 2020, it is now in full effect. What are the primary legal consequences for scammers operating online?
Now, the Cyber Crimes Act obviously has come in, and it came in right in good time. you know, to obviously deal with these particular scams. There are criminal sanctions that it imposes on for particular crimes. For instance, where there is cyber fraud and extortion, those now carry up to 15 year sentence.
Mm-hmm. Jail sentence.
There is what we call, yes, a jail sentence. And then there's what we call revenge porn. For instance, people were dating and they were sharing you know, intimate photos moments, of each other, and then after the breakup, what one then does is, you know, to spite the other, they say, you know, I'm going to share this with the whole world or whatever, whoever. That now carries a 4-year sentence or a 300,000 rand fine.
Good.
So these are not slapping the wrists fines anymore. They are are very serious.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously the Cyber Crimes Act is now operational, fully operational, and the police can arrest and prosecute you, or they can charge you for whatever it is that you do. And like I said, these crimes now carry very hefty prison sentences.
Now tell me, I know I'm just going to be veering off just like a slight bit. I mean, you're mentioning this. In terms of cyberbullying, do you know if the Act says anything about that?
It is unclear at this point in time, and it would depend on what the cyberbullying entails.
Mm-hmm.
Because the sharing of intimate photos can also amount to bullying a person.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it will depend on what is done in bullying that particular victim.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously, what you're seeking to know, for instance, is if I call you names and things like that on social media,
mm-hmm.
that then becomes defamatory.
Now, I'm trying to rush for time because I think I need us to cover some ground. Now, you know, can a user be held legally liable in South Africa for sharing or retweeting a defamatory or fraudulent post? And we see that a lot. You see a post, you're scrolling on a Facebook or Twitter or whatever, and then you reshare that because you're thinking, it's funny. Can a person be actually held liable?
Most definitely. Most definitely, Zama. Most definitely.
Hmm.
So in South Africa, I think some time ago we spoke about defamation.
Yes, yes.
And we said that defamation involves the publication.
Hmm.
Right. Now, when a user shares what has been shared by somebody else,
mm-hmm.
that is called publishing. So you're publishing that particular information.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you, along with the originator of that particular information, have committed a similar crime.
I see.
It doesn't matter who the originator was.
Mm-hmm.
You are put in the same blanket as the originator of that or the author mm-hmm. of that particular post.
Yeah. Man, now, there are these challenges or surveys, you know, and I think you've spoken about this, but I see a lot of them on social media these days, asking for personal information or et cetera, et cetera. Should I just block the person? Will it make them go away? Or should I, because I've heard other people saying, no, just tag them along and see what they're doing. What would you say is an appropriate response to some of these?
Obviously not responding to any of the questions. It's easier to block. If you block them, then you don't interact with them. If you tag them along, you are giving them information, or maybe you're giving them the incorrect information. I don't know. But bottom line is, once you start sharing information such as your ID number, your birth date, What they then do is they use that particular information to take over your bank accounts, for instance, because now they've got the information that they needed. So the best way when you're dealing with that is obviously try and avoid, never share any personal information or answer any security questions that you're asked online by anyone other than your bank. And you must be certain that that is your bank. And the banks generally would not ask you, some of the information. They'd ask you for information that they normally would have. If you receive a call from somebody purporting to be from a bank, the best thing is for you to hang up the call, say to them, look, I will call you back. Then what you then do is you call the bank back on the numbers that are provided by the bank. For instance, for fraud, the bank has designated numbers for different things. What you then do is you call the bank and verify from the bank that, look, I received a call at such and such a time and they were asking for ABC information. Was that the bank? And the bank would be able to tell you whether that it was the bank or it was somebody else.
Now, I just want to zoom in on to just something, because I want now to steps that a person can take in a practical way, because I'm looking at how they and I know that you may not perhaps have had a look at the extensiveness of the act itself, the Cyber Crimes Act. However, you know, I don't know how practical it could be to catch a person who was trying to scam you or defamed you, etc., etc. Because remember, you've not met this person. You only know their handle, for instance, their social media handle. Now, trying to get hold of them could be difficult. I mean, there's also the Poppy Act that could also be working together with this, because now if the police, for instance, are going to be investigating this, I don't know how far they're empowered to say they must dig up who is behind this account. Is that possible to actually get to? I mean, since 2020, when this law was promulgated, have we had any successes? Has it been possible to actually prosecute?
Thank you very much, Zama. This is a very, very pertinent question that you're asking. And one of the major challenges that the police have is the fact that the victims do not report these crimes. The police cannot act on information that they do not have. That is the first thing, and that is the first major challenge. Mm-hmm. It is possible to track down, investigate, and arrest the scammers. The hawks now have a dedicated 419 scam task team that is actively investigating these particular crimes. Most notably, there is a particular 419 scammer who was arrested not too long ago in South Africa, and they were involved in this romance scam. So these things are possible, and what government is doing and what the Interpol is doing is that they are communicating between themselves, and they're doing this joint task teams to track down and close down these scammers. So it is possible, definitely, to track down and arrest. But the main problem is the fact that your introduction to this particular question says that, look, it happens online. I don't know this person. I don't even know how to get them. All I have is their handle. The investigation can go So far as to get the actual computer that was used to scam you. They can get the IP address of the computer. They can track it down specifically, geographically, to the place where the scam actually happened. So it is possible, and the investigation teams have evolved so much that they are making it easier and easier to investigate and to catch those criminals.
Man, I must let you go. The reason I was asking that is that some of these crimes, you know, online, etc. I came across a case through a friend of mine who, you know, related the issue to the police, and the police tried to track and get hold of this person. But the investigating team came back to them and said, "Listen, we're struggling to get hold of this person, so we." The case is cold as a result, and so they closed it. So I suppose also I think the upskilling of the South African Police Service may have to actually happen sooner rather than later so that it can actually link up with this new act.
That is true. That is true, Zama. There's critically, what needs to happen is one must have evidence, right? For instance, you must secure the screenshots of the conversations that you have. Where a company is used, sometimes they use sham companies. They register these companies and they use them to defraud people. What you do is you report directly to the hoax or you report directly to the CIPC if it is a fake company, and then the CIPC is able to then trace. If they are fake accounts, sometimes there's accounts that they use, you know, to transfer money and quickly move it. You can report it to the bank, to your bank, to say, this is what has happened, and I need you to track down this money and shut it down. So basically, the banks can also assist, because you must understand that there is a number of acts as well as organizations that are able to assist. For instance, the Prevention of Organized Crime Act is there to assist. And if scammers are obviously using what we call mule accounts, they face serious charges for that as well. So these things happen. And you're quite right about the skilling of the police officers. What generally happens is sometimes when I go and report, I walk into the charge office and the first person that I see is a low-ranking officer,
constable,
who automatically thinks, oh no, this thing happened online, there's no way we can do it. You can't stop there. You have to go forward and say, I need to see the special investigation units that deal with this. So that I want to get you to imagine this, Zama. Right.
Right.
When somebody is murdered, they can triangulate your cell phone exactly to the geographical location of where that person was when that person was murdered. If, for instance, you were involved in the crime.
Yeah, yeah.
Why can't it be done for fraud cases? It can be done. And it is possible. It is simply, at times, it is simply because the people that are then tasked with running with those particular cases then decide that, oh no, maybe you know, you were scammed of only 20,000 rand. 20,000 rand is not much, as opposed to the recent case where in South Africa a victim lost about 3.5 million.
My goodness!
And the hoax were able to track that down. So it is possible.
Man,
it definitely is possible.
Yeah, man, we can talk about these subjects until cows come home. I must thank you so much for this, and I think we'll make some other time to actually get deeper into these things, because I think social media is a minefield. I mean, a lot of things are happening there. People are talking carelessly. People are making defamatory statements about other people, etc., etc. So I'm glad that the law is actually catching up with this. But I must thank you so much for coming through this afternoon.
Thank you so much, Sama.
Thank you.
And thank you to your listeners.
Thank you. And bye-bye.
Adventist World Radio, SID Media. We are not general practitioners. We are specialists in Bible-based content.